Hi, I'm Jay from JinxNavigator.com, and this is the podcast where we're making our way through all the issues of The Jinx. It's a newsletter for magicians and mentalists from about 90 years ago. A lot of what we do as mystery performers today can be traced back to something from The Jinx, you know, including some of the new effects being released now. In this podcast, we browse through every issue and find out how many of the ideas are still usable. Are they just old, or are they old and terrible? In either case, we can often tweak things and bring them back to life. We're looking at issue number 3 today, which contains the editorial by Theodore Animan, A Card in Transit by Les Gilbert, A Real Psychic Card Test by Animan, Dead or Alive by Animan, The Bending Swizzle Stick by Animan, and we're going to cap it off with a poem, not by Animan. Let's dive into the editorial, but first, in his editorials, Ted Animan talks about which performers are at the different venues, and while I know how to pronounce Thurston, there will be names I've read but never heard, so I will, I promise you, pronounce some names so wrong that you will roll your eyes and whisper, "Idiot," at the podcasting device. Just letting you know that I know it will happen. Probably lots. In the editorial of this issue, Animan talks about how pleased he is with the circulation passing the 600 mark and says he has ideas and angles to make The Jinx the biggest quarter's worth ever put before a magician. So just some quick math, 25 cents times 600 is $150 gross per issue, which had to be printed and mailed. Plus, we don't know how much he paid the contributors, although in these early issues, Animan's byline is on most of them. But with the average wage those days at about $40 a month, he was probably profitable right away. Animan doesn't pull punches in his editorials, and while he doesn't name names, he lets go with some comments about what feels like a competing newsletter. He says, quote, "One person who always seems to follow a month behind with ideas that seem similar to those that have gone before is advertising a monthly concoction that upsets me no whit and causes great lack of sleep, solely because of the creator's opinion that all magic lovers are at, or have yet to reach, the age of 12. End quote. In upcoming editorials, he will name and shame and call people out when he thinks it's needed. In this editorial, Animan also talks about Fred Keating, who he worked with in earlier days, and was now starring in a movie called The Captain Hates the Sea, which was also the first Columbia feature that included the Three Stooges in the cast. Then there are a couple long paragraphs that could have been written by someone today. Well, except for the part about nightclubs and cabaret being great places to perform. But everything else he wrote about full-time magicians versus part-time is right on and worth looking up to read on JinxNavigator.com. Then Animan gets into what will end up being the bulk of his editorials, who's working where. For example, he talks about the show Cardini and Count Orloff are doing at the Manhattan Music Hall, and then Di Vernon and Nate Leipzig, and then Gully Gully, who is doing the Cups and Balls with Baby Chicks as a finish. As a side note, PETA didn't come around until 1980. This editorial finishes with some advice for performers of the time, one piece of which is that every stage magician should be building up a routine of close-up tricks because, and I quote, "you'll find it paying dividends in enhanced reputation, if not actual cash." First magic effect of this issue is from Les Gilbert, and is called A Card in Transit. The effect is very simple to describe. Hand your helper a joker or the ace of spades or some special card, and then shuffle the deck. Your helper inserts the card they're holding halfway into the deck, and you remove that card and all the cards above it, allowing the helper to see the card next to the one they stuck in. Using a marker, the helper initials the card, and then that stack is laid face up on the table for a moment while you put away the marker and get ready for the magic. The two halves of the deck, including the helper's card that's been staring at them, are put together and immediately shuffled. You now spread the cards and have the helper look for their initial card, which has vanished. Ask the helper to reach into your pocket and pull out the card they find. It's the card with their initials. This effect requires a little sleight of hand. I'm not a card guy, but I used to do some basic sleights, and that's all this would take to do. It does require a gimmicked card, and I think you can probably buy them, But if you have Buave sitting around that you're not using, you could use one of the cards from that. There's also a move that, at least in reading it, I don't like. I think it would be kind of awkward to actually do. When they initial the card, it's in the deck, and you lift and bend the card's back so they can initial the face of it. If I were the initialer, I'd probably be thinking, why did he do it that way? Someone who has more experience with cards is likely to know of a better way to do the move that is required, so it's probably worth looking at the article just in case it connects the right brain cells and gives you one of those aha moments. Next, we have a real psychic card test by Ted Aneman, and he says it is the simplest of the simple in method, and I agree. It's also something I'm going to try at the next Magic Club meeting. You state that you will prove that a card's identity can be transmitted by thought alone. Your helper takes any card, making sure it's a number card, and takes that and a little chalkboard off to the other side of the room and draws a picture of the card they chose. You grab another chalkboard, go to the opposite corner, and draw something. Both of you come back together, turn your chalkboards to the audience where they will see the same card drawn on both. Simple effect and an equally simple method thanks to 8 Kings or Cy Stebbins or your favorite. The chalkboards aren't technically needed, but they do add time and distance misdirection to the effect to throw the audience off the beaten track. And if you don't have chalkboards handy, you could do this, I think, as kind of an impromptu close-up routine with a couple business cards. And that way they have a souvenir to take away with them. It's time for Dead or Alive from Theodore Aneman. Now, this isn't the first living or dead test. It's just another one. And Aneman even mentions that the method is far from new. And that was in the 1930s. So here's how the effect looks. You pass out 4 blank cards and have people write the name of a living person on them. And a 5th person gets a card to write down the name of someone dead. Just editorial comment here. Living and dead tests seem like the dumbest presentation ever. Here, write somebody's name who's dead. I think I've mentioned this before. In fact, every time we talk about Dead or Alive, I'm going to mention that it's a stupid presentation. Unless you're doing a seance. That is about the only place where talking to dead people makes sense. Where was I? 4 cards with living names, 1 card with a dead name. Cards are collected face down and mixed, and then you put them all into one envelope and seal it. Holding the sealed envelope to your forehead, you use all the power of your mighty brain and correctly reveal the name of the dead person. No fishing, nothing like that. But wait, there's more. Rip open the envelope and pull out the cards, still face down. Mix them on the table in front of you. Pass your hand over them and finally choose one and return the dead name card to the writer. So if you've done any mentalism in the past, I'm sure you know the method for this, or a method for this. We do live on trips to Staples and Office Max for more and more envelopes, don't we? This requires some tweaking of the envelope, but can you even call make a cut arts and crafts? You also might want to let one fingernail grow a bit to make a certain tweak to one of the cards. I liked the look of this little routine when I first read it. You could have an envelope with 5 blank cards in the console of your car, in a pocket of your jacket, on your desk at work, or so on, and be ready to perform this at any time, you know, when you had 5 other people there. There are a few angles you need to watch out for, but it's not horrible in that regard. And while it reads almost like a self-working trick, it's not. There are really no sleights involved, just one bit of handling that I thought would be no sweat. In fact, Aneman himself says, try this several times with the material in hand, and it will be found an easy move. Well, I'm still playing around with it, but it's not yet to the point where I'll show my always first audience, my wife. I first tried a #1 coin envelope with business cards, but found you need an envelope that's big enough for the cards to have a little wiggle room when you put them in. Then I tried a #7 envelope, and while it's really too big for a little stack of business cards, at least it let me play with the workings. I'm thinking now a #5 envelope might be just about right, but I'm out of those right now. All that to say, grab 5 blank cards in an envelope is probably not all you'll need to do unless you get incredibly lucky the first try, or you're just a better worker than I am. But it's a nice little routine, other than the living dead part. it deserves some fiddling around with it to get it just right. When I discover the perfect sized envelope, I will post it as a comment on this article at jinxnavigator.com. The Bending Swizzle Stick is next from Theodore Anneman. And this is one that probably won't be useful for 99% of us. It's a takeoff from the rubber pencil optical illusion that you probably learned in grade school. But it uses a swizzle stick or mixing rod made of glass. You walk up to a table where people have been drinking and where there are some mixing rods laying on the table. You grab one and start shaking it, but it doesn't bend. So you drop that one and grab another and try that one, which bends. That's the old rubber pencil illusion. Tell the astonished onlookers that the club is replacing the old-style breakable stirring sticks with these newfangled bendable glass sticks. You let it drop on the table so they can see and hear it's real glass. Then you make it bend one more time and start to leave. But coming back to the table, you're shaking a bendable rod in your hand and tell them to be careful not to stop shaking it too quickly because it could be right in the middle of a bend. You, of course, then stop shaking it quickly and hold the stick still, allowing them to see an actual bend in the glass stick. Then drop it on the table for them to check out. Bent. Anneman admits this is just a gag and not an actual bit of magic, but he really, really likes it. I don't know that I've ever seen a glass mixing rod, but at the same time, I'm not a drinker, and I don't frequent fancy pants kinds of places, so maybe they're out there. I do know that if you want to try it, you can buy packs of glass stirring sticks on Amazon for less than $10. And if you have a gas stove in your kitchen or a blowtorch in your garage, you're all set to get yourself a bendable glass swizzle stick. Check out the complete instructions at jinxnavigator.com. Finally, in this issue, we wrap up with a poem that was given to Anneman by the great Lester at an IBM convention. Now, he doesn't say that the great Lester wrote it, but he does say there's a lot of truth in it. I'm not going to recite it for you, partly because that's just not me, but partly because reading it gets me riled up, because it sounds like it's an instruction for today. Say anything loud enough and often enough, and people will believe it. I'll let you go read it for yourself. Also, in case you don't know about the great Lester, he wasn't a magician, but a ventriloquist, and referred to as the grandfather of modern-day ventriloquism. In fact, Edgar Bergen was one of his students. That's it for this episode of the Jinx Navigator podcast. To see every article in every issue of the Jinx, go to jinxnavigator.com and sign up, which is, yes, completely free. Use the contact form on that site and let me know what you think of this podcast. Good or bad or indifferent. I'm Jay Jennings, and I hope you join me again next time when we explore issue number 4, which includes an effect called cigarette perception. Don't know anybody who smokes yet. And it was like, who smokes anymore? Some people do, but even if you don't know anybody who smokes, the method for this is a nice tool to have available for people other than smokers. And I thank you in advance for helping spread the word about this, the Jinx Navigator podcast. See you next week.